Shabbos Daf Mem Ches. Rabbi and Rabbi Zera once went to the Reish Galusa's house and they saw a servant putting some cold water on top of a kettle to heat it up. Rabbi told the servant not to. Rabbi Zera wasn't sure why. He said, "What's the problem with it? We know that you're allowed to put a kettle on top of another kettle, so what's wrong with doing this? Aren't you allowed to heat up with a kettle?" Rabbi answered, "It's different cases. It's fine to preserve the heat of the top kettle. There you're just keeping something warm. However, you're not allowed to add heat to the cold water. You're not allowed to use the kettle to warm something up in the first place." Then Rabbi and Rabbi Zera saw a servant putting a turban over a jug of water, and then they put a ladle on it, and then the turban was going to start getting wet, basically, from this whole process. And Rabbi told the servant not to do that. Rabbi Zera said, "Why not?" And Rabbi said, "Just wait, you'll see what's going to happen." And sure enough, the servant later squeezed out the turban to wring out all the water, which is not allowed on Shabbos. But Rabbi Zera says, "Why not? We know that you're allowed to put a rag on top of a bowl of liquid, even though the rag's not going to get wet, because we don't expect the person who's doing that to start wringing out the rag. So what's different here?" And Rabbi answers, "By the rag, you don't care about the rag. You don't care if it's wet or not. However, by the turban, you care about that. So it's very, you know, it's very likely that you're going to squeeze it out and wring it out because you care about the water." The Mishnah about the turban getting wet. The Mishnah says that you are not allowed to insulate with flocking, which we said was cotton or wool, when they are moist. So Rav Adbar Masna says to Abai, so clearly from here we're allowed to use dry flocking. So if you did insulate the flocking when it's dry, if you did insulate with dry flocking, are you allowed to move it? Is it considered muksa? So Abai answers back, it's clear from here, we know that you would usually rather use straw, which is much less valuable for your insulation. And the only reason you're using the flocking, which is a lot more expensive, is because you don't have any straw around. But that doesn't mean you're designating this flocking, which is worth money, for permanent insulation. And therefore, since it's just a one-time thing, it's going to remain muksa. So it seems like this brisa that says you can insulate with wool shearings, with mats of combed wool, with strips of purple wool, and with flocking, but you are not allowed to move it. It seems like this is a proof for a buy because it says you can insulate with the flocking, but you can't move it. However, the Gemara answers back, it's not necessarily a proof, because this brisa means that if you didn't use the flocking for insulation, then it's muksa. It's only talking about, in general, flocking is muksa. However, if you did use the flocking for insulation, then it's not going to be muksa. However, the Gemara says, but that's obvious. Why would we need a brisa to teach that flocking is going to be muksa when it's not used for insulation? We know that flocking is going to be muksa if it's just, you know, regular flocking. It's only, that's very obvious. So the Gemara answers that you might have thought that since flocking has the use of being able that you can recline on it and sit on it, then it's not going to be muksa. So you might have thought that, but this is coming to teach you that no, regular flocking is basically considered useless and it would be muksa. Rav Chisda says that you can return flocking to a pillow on Shabbos. If some of it fell out, you can restuff it. Rav Chanan Bar Chisda has a problem with this though, because the Braisa says you can untie the neck opening of a garment on Shabbos. They used to, you know, sew the neck shut. And so they would sew it very loosely, which is, it was made to be untied, so you are allowed to untie that on Shabbos. However, you are not allowed to tear open a new hole in a garment in the first place to create the neck hole. And the bracelet continues to say you also can't put flocking into a pillow or mattress on Shabbos or Yontif. So we see from here that you can't stuff flocking into a pillow or a mattress. But the Gemara answer is that is talking about the brisa that says you are not allowed to do it is when you're putting in when you're first initially stuffing a pillow or a mattress. However, Rav Chisda was talking about a case where you're restuffing the flocking of the pillow or mattress when it fell out. It's fine to restuff. And we have a brisa that says straight out that you can't put flocking into a mattress or pillow on Shabbos Yontiv initially, but if it fell out, you are allowed to put it back into the mattress or the pillow on Shabbos Yontiv. You would be allowed to restuff it. Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav, says that if you open a new hole for the neck in a garment, right, you have material and you cut open a new hole that was never there, then you are chayav to bring a carbon chatas. You're not allowed to do that. Rav Kahana says, but we have a braisa that says you can open a barrel lid on Shabbos. How is opening a barrel lid where the lid is, you know, screwed down onto the barrel, how is that any different than the case of opening up tearing a new hole for the garment? So the Gemara answers that by the garment, that's a case where it's one unbroken piece of material. And when you open the hole, you're creating a new hole that was never there. So it's considered completing the utensil. And that's why it's not allowed. But by the barrel lid, it's not one piece with a barrel. The lid is not part of the barrel. The hole was already there. You're just removing the lid, but it's not considered completing the utensil. And therefore, it is allowed on Shabbos. Rav Yirmiyah asks Rav Zera, he has a problem. There's a Mishnah that says that clothes that were loosely stitched together by the launderer. They used to stitch them together while they were washing them. A keychain and wool garment that were sewed together by linen is considered a single utensil for tumah until you start separating them. Because they're all together, they're viewed as one utensil. But this, so from here we see that the clothes that were tied together by the launderers, they've already been washed and now they're returned when they tie them all up when they return them. So we see from here that once utensils are joined for a specific work, they're going to be considered joined even when that work is done, because the clothes here are done being laundered, they're done being washed, and they've been returned, and they're still considered like one. However, we have a Mishnah that completely contradicts this, that said that a stick that was made into an axe handle, it's considered joined for tumah, meaning if the stick becomes tumah, the axe becomes tumah, and vice versa. However, this is only true while you're working with it. If you're not working with it, the implication is that it would not be considered joined. So as that makes sense, they seem to directly contradict themselves. So Zera answers that when you're not working with the axe, a person is very likely to just throw the handle back with the other pieces of wood. They're not really considered joined when they're not being worked with for that very reason. However, even when you're not doing the laundry, when you're done with the laundry and your clothes have been returned to you, a person would be very happy to keep them connected until he's ready to use them, because in case they get dirty, then you could just re-launder them very easily. So that is why by the clothes, they're considered connected and joined, whether or not they're being worked with or not. In Surah, they taught this teaching in the name of Rav Chista. In Pumadisa, they taught this teaching in the name of Rav Kahana. And Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav, says that Rav Meir is the opinion, the Tana, who taught that things are always joined together, even if they don't need to be. Even if something's joined together and it's not really aiding the thing at all, it's still considered joined together. And the Mishnah explains what this is talking about. We see from here exactly what the case is, that if you have an oil, spice, or a lamp receptacle of a stove, which basically stoves had a little receptacle that you could put like a flask of oil in or things like that, or spices to heat them up. But obviously this receptacle doesn't serve the stove for any purpose. It's just there to help the person heat up things in this receptacle. But that's going to be considered tumah if the stove is touched by something tumah, but it's not going to become tumah if something that's tumah only went through the airspace of the stove, according to Rav Meir. So we have two rules here, that if something tumah touches the stove, that will transfer the tumah to the receptacle, because the receptacle is considered part of the stove. But then seemingly it seems to say the opposite, that if something is in the airspace of the stove, granted the stove will become tumah, but the receptacle is not going to become tumah, because in this case it's not considered joined to the stove. And Reb Shimon argues, he says that it's always going to be tahor whether or not the stove was touched or something was in the airspace of the stove, it's going to stay tahor. So Gemara notes what we had been saying, that Rabbi Shimon makes a lot of sense, because he's saying that the receptacle is not part of the stove and that's why it's not going to get tameh. But Rabbi Meir, that doesn't make sense, because if he holds that the receptacle is considered joined to the stove, then it should be tameh when something is even in the airspace. And if it's not considered joined to the stove, then it shouldn't even be tameh when something touches the stove. So how do we answer this? So Gemara says, midoraisa, really the receptacle is not considered part of the stove. It's only considered a part of the stove derabanan, on a derabanan level. And the reason that the rabbanan did not say that something is going to be that the receptacle will become tameh when something is in the airspace of the stove is because they want to make a distinction here so that people would know that the receptacle is only tameh derabanan. And the reason it's so important for people to know that the receptacle is only tameh derabanan is in the case where, let's say, the receptacle became tameh and then it came in contact with truma or kudshim. When tithes or karbano become tameh on a derabanan level, then they only have to be left to rot, but you can't burn them. If they became tameh on a deoraisa level, you would have to burn them because you're not allowed to have them. But since they're only tameh on a derabanan level, we don't want to burn them because you're not allowed to burn these things for no reason. And since it's only tumah derabanan, we don't want to burn it, but we know that you just leave it there because it's in a state of doubt whether it's tameh or not. And that's the rule. And therefore, it's very important for people to know that the receptacle is only tameh derabanan so that they don't come to burn their truma or kachim, which would be a big mistake if they weren't actually supposed to be burned, and that's why they instituted this differentiation in the ruling. We have another braisa which has something along the same lines, that scissors that are able to come apart when you're not using them, or a carpenter's plane which has a removable blade, they're going to be considered attached in both cases for tumah, that if one part gets tameh, the rest will become tameh, but they would need, when you're making them tahor, they would need a separate sprinkling of the para aduma ashes, the red heifer ashes. And why is that so? If they're considered attached, then they shouldn't need a separate sprinkling. One sprinkling on the entire thing should be enough. If they're not considered attached, so too by tumah, they should also not be considered attached. That if one part gets tumah, the rest should not become tumah. So Rava answers that midoraisa, they're considered attached. Both when you're working with them, both for tuma and for sprinkling, that when you're working with them, if they became tame, then they would be considered, both parts would be tame, and they would only need one sprinkling. And if you're not working with them, then they would be considered not attached, both for tuma and for the sprinkling. That if you're not using them and one part became tame, the rest would not become tame, and so too by the paraduma ashes. However, on a derabanan level, they declare that the things are going to be tame even when you're not using them, because in a case where you were using them, they would be tame. So they made a gzera that even when you're not using them, both things can become tame. And they also made a gzera that they're not going to be considered attached for regarding the sprinkling, because when you're using them, because in a case where you weren't using them, they would be considered unattached. And therefore, they basically took the stringencies of both rulings and applied them to both cases, when you're using them and when you're not using them. And that is how we ended up with this hybrid ruling. Shkayach.